Welcome to the Trial Talk podcast. I'm your host, I'm Charlotte Hartley, and I'm a Science Communications Officer at the MRC Clinical Trials Unit at UCL. In this show, we explore the clinical trial landscape by talking to the clinicians and researchers behind the work we do. If you're interested in learning how our research can help improve healthcare in the UK and around the world, this is the podcast for you. This is a very special year for the MRC Clinical Trials Unit as we're celebrating our 25th anniversary. That's 25 years of smarter studies, global impact, and better health. In this episode, I'm speaking to one of our methodology researchers, Brennan Khan, about his work on estimands. We'll talk about what estimands are, why clinical trials should be using them, and we'll explore a real-world example of how estimands can improve clinical trials. So, welcome, Brennan, to the podcast. Could you give us a quick introduction?
Hiya, I'm Brennan. So I'm a Principal Research Fellow at the MRC Clinical Trials Unit at UCL, and I work in the methodology group. So I'm a statistician, and a lot of my research interests involved looking at how we can make clinical trials and other studies more efficient and more relevant by kind of answering more appropriate questions and using better statistical methods to do so.
And one of your research interests, which we're going to focus on in this episode, is estimands. So a problem that can sometimes arise with clinical trials is that the method of analysing the trial data ends up answering a question that maybe isn't very useful in a real-world setting. And then that can lead to problems with how people interpret and use the trial results. So for those who aren't familiar with the term, could you explain what estimands are and how do they help us address this problem?
Yeah, so I think estimands are often viewed as these quite complicated or scary things, but really an estimand is just a way of explaining what the research question you're trying to answer in your study is. So estimands really just give researchers a way of defining their precise research question in a way that other people can understand. And this is really important because we all know that trials or other studies can answer quite different questions, and different questions might lead to different answers and be of interest to different types of people. So, for example, if we were doing a study to determine how well a new medical device worked for patients, the device manufacturer might be interested in understanding, well, how well does the device work if the doctors or patients used it exactly according to the instructions in the manual? But of course, in real life, doctors or patients don't or can't always use things exactly as they should. And so for them, the most relevant question might really be, how well is the medical device going to work, given I'm going to try but not always be able to follow those instructions precisely. So here, an estimand is really just a way of helping to differentiate between which of those questions a study is set out to answer so that people can understand what the results mean and understand how well those results apply to the question they're interested in.
Okay, great. So it's about making it really clear what the actual research question is and therefore what the results mean in that context. So how established is this idea of estimands in the world of clinical trials? How widely are they used at the moment?
Yeah, so I think the background to estimands is quite interesting because as a concept, estimands have been around for years or even decades, but they've been getting a lot more attention recently. And this is because of new guidelines that have been released from drug regulators like the FDA, as well as the pharmaceutical industry. And the guidelines set out basically a framework for how estimands should be used. And I think the reason for these guidelines is that historically, trials haven't always been clear about the exact research question they're trying to address. And that's made it very difficult both for drug regulators to understand trial results, and also for really anyone using those trial results to inform, you know, decisions about which treatments to fund or to use to understand those results. So I think with the new guidelines, I think estimands are becoming increasingly used, particularly in the pharmaceutical industry, because it is something that's being driven by drug regulators as well as the pharmaceutical industry. And I think they are being used in academia as well, although obviously, because we often don't have to go to drug regulators with our trials, there's not so much of a requirement to use them. So I think there is a little bit more of a lag in academia in seeing uptake of estimands.
So, why should clinical trials researchers be using estimands? What are the benefits and what problems might arise when people don't use estimands?
Yeah, so I think historically, often people trials that haven't used estimands, they kind of say this is how we've done the analysis. And people wanting to understand or use those trial results to inform decisions. So, for example, healthcare payers or doctors or patients have had to kind of infer or guess, what question that analysis is answering, which is something that's quite difficult to do. And it turns out a lot of these trials have been answering questions that aren't always of most relevance to people actually using those trials. So it would It's been common for trials to estimate, how good would a treatment be if all those patients who had to stop treatment because of serious side effects or treatment toxicity had actually kept taking the treatment instead. And that's not really a very relevant question for most patients because actually, it's not realistic that they're going to be able to ignore, side effects or toxicity and keep taking the treatment. So, if we're making decisions based on those sorts of treatment effects, we're not necessarily going to be making the best decisions, for patients. So the I think idea behind estimands, the I think one of the real benefits they provide is making it clear, what the question is and how relevant that question is. And they also have, I think, another quite important benefit of once we understand what the question is, we can then look at, well, what is the best way of answering that question? So what are the most appropriate statistical methods to use in this particular study for this question?
Yeah, I think that's one thing that can help people understand it. So it's about starting with the research question, and then that informs the way the trial is analyzed rather than doing it the other way around.
Yeah, I think that's exactly it. I think historically, the way that we've often done trials is we start with the analysis, and then based on the analysis that we choose, often for statistical reasons, that tells us what the question is. And really, you're right, it should be the other way around. We should be saying, well, this is the question we want to answer, this is what we think is most relevant. And so, what is the analysis that best matches that question? And so estimands are really a way of, I think, formalizing that idea and making sure we put the question first and then the analysis and not the other way around.
And what are some of the barriers that might stop people from using estimands, especially in academic trials where it's a bit less common at the moment?
Yeah, I think it is starting to happen more and more, but possibly not as much as it could be or should be. And I think some of the big challenges are just is something that's quite new to a lot of people. It's the guidelines have only come out in the last few years, so there's always going to be a bit of time that it takes for people to get familiar and start to implement these things. I think there is a little bit of a learning curve with the new concepts and the new terminology being used, and a lack of, examples saying, this is how to actually do it that people can follow. And I think there's, also sometimes a bit of a lack of guidance on, well, if this is the estimand you want, how do you actually go off and analyze that for your trial? Because that's also a big part of it, not just saying, this is the question we want, but also how do we answer that question? So there are a number of barriers, I think, for people to start using estimands. But I think there's a lot of research going on in the area, both in academia and in pharmaceutical industry, Really with the aim of, I think, making it easier for people to implement estimands and understand which estimands they might want to consider in their own trials and how to go off and design the trial to estimate those estimands.
Going back now to these new estimands guidelines that you mentioned, you've been doing some work to try and sort of explain the guidelines and encourage people who work in clinical trials to use them properly. So could you tell me a bit more about that?
Yeah, sure. So we have a new paper that's come out recently, published in the BMJ, and it's essentially a tutorial or primer on the estimands framework that was released by the pharmaceutical industry and drug regulators. And I think a large motivation behind the paper is that the guidelines released by regulators, it's a regulatory document. So it's, I think, very useful, very helpful, but it is written in some ways a more kind of technical manner. So it's not something that I think a lot of people who, are coming to estimands new would necessarily be able to pick up and immediately start using. I think there's a bit of a learning curve there. As well as there's a lot of kind of new language and new concepts that some people may not be familiar with. So the idea of our new tutorial article is really to kind of help explain these concepts and this language to people who aren't familiar with these new guidelines. So to really explain what estimands are, why they're useful, what the language being used means, and how to apply estimands to their own studies.
I was wondering, could you share an example maybe of a term or a concept in the guidelines that people might be less familiar with, but that you've tried to explain in a more accessible way in this paper?
So one of the big things is the term intercurrent event. And what that means is that's really just something that might affect our interpretation of what the treatment effect means. So quite often that would be something like a patient stopping treatment early or getting a different treatment to the one they were assigned. And based around this, we could think about asking quite different types of questions. So, what would the effect of the treatment have been if everyone had continued on treatment versus what is the effect, given some people stopped? And one of the really key components of defining an estimand is saying for the different types of intercurrent events in a study, what strategy you're going to use to handle them in the estimand definition. So what type of question are you going to try to answer around those intercurrent events? So there are a number of different strategies that can be used. And so we tried to kind of clarify what each type of strategy means. So for example, a treatment policy strategy really just means that we're interested in the effect of treatment, regardless of the fact that some people may not have taken it exactly as intended. Whereas a hypothetical strategy means we're interested in what the treatment effect would have been if those patients had continued to take the treatment, even if they hadn't. And so we say hypothetical because we're really thinking of some sort of hypothetical setting where they had continued treatment or not experienced the intercurrent event.
And you said that one of the challenges is there not being enough examples of how to use estimands well. So, in your paper, you give an example of an emergency bowel surgery trial. And I think it would be helpful to talk through that example and how you used estimands there.
So this is the FLOELA trial. So, like you said, it's a trial in emergency bowel surgery. And the aim is really to understand whether a cardiac output monitor is an effective way to tell anesthesiologists when to give fluid during surgery and how much fluid to give. And in particular, we want to see whether the cardiac output monitor is better than just leaving it to clinician judgment around how much fluid and when to give it. So we did apply the estimands framework to the FLOELA trial, and it actually did kind of change our thinking around what the question was and how we should do the analysis. Because one of the main aims of the Fluella trial was really to understand how well the cardiac output monitor would work in real life circumstances. So it was a pragmatic trial. So we wanted to know how well would it work in the real world. And one of the frequent recommendations for pragmatic trials is that we use what's called an intention to treat analysis, which just means that we include all randomized patients in the analysis, even if they didn't follow the protocol exactly or use the treatment exactly as they should. And this makes a lot of sense because often people don't use the treatment exactly as they should in the real world. And so intention to treat helps us capture this effect in our analysis. But it turns out when we were thinking about Fluella, what we realized is that intention to treat was actually not answering the exact right question for us. And the reason for that is some people in Fluella would be randomized, but then would have their surgery cancelled, either because they became too unwell to undergo surgery or because the issue resolved itself. And so here, intention to treat was going to be answering the question, how effective is this cardiac output monitor, regardless of whether patients actually underwent surgery? And the issue is, of course, we only give fluid to patients who do undergo surgery. So we're really only interested in understanding, the difference between a cardiac output monitor or clinical judgment in those patients undergoing surgery who would get fluid. And so once we kind of thought about this from an Estimands perspective, it made us realize actually intention to treat isn't going to be the right analysis here, and we need to use something more appropriate for our research question.
So what analysis did you then use instead?
So it turns out in this case, it's actually a very simple analysis. So we decided we're really just interested in the treatment effect in those patients who would undergo surgery. And because cancellation of surgery isn't going to be affected by treatment allocation, so they're not patients aren't going to be any more likely to have their surgery canceled if they were assigned to the cardiac output monitor as compared to clinical judgment. It turns out the actually simple way to analyze this is to just do the analysis only in those patients who do undergo surgery. So it's a very simple analysis, and it lets us answer the question that we're really interested in.
Brilliant. So then what's next for your work on Estimands?
So one of the big topics we're looking at is how to actually do the estimation. So what method of analysis do we need to use to estimate different types of estimands? Because obviously it's very important to choose the right estimand, but also equally important to choose the right methods to kind of answer that research question. And there's a lot of information out there about different types of analysis. And so one of the things we're looking at is really helping to summarize some of this information to give investigators or trial statisticians a bit more information on, for a particular type of estimand, what are the different methods of analysis we might think about using? What are the assumptions each of those methods makes? And what are the considerations we might want to think about when choosing between different methods of analysis? And of course, one of the most important parts is how do we actually implement that method of analysis? How do we implement that in a statistical software package to actually run the analysis? So that's one of the big topics we're looking at next.
And are you planning to, or have you already done any work with patient and public involvement around Estimands?
Yeah, so I think that's one of the other big areas of research we're taking because obviously, the research question is really important to the interpretation of results and how those results are used. And really, this affects patients most of all. So it's obviously important that patients have a say in what that research question should be. So we are doing some work to develop materials that can help patients be engaged with the trial team on discussions about which estimands are most appropriate.
Great, and we've talked about the paper, but are there any other resources or upcoming opportunities for people to learn a bit more about the Estimands framework?
So we are going to be running an upcoming one-day workshop on how to estimate different types of estimands. That will take place here at the MRC on June 5th. There are also some YouTube videos available, which I think there's a link to on the MRC estimands page, which are from a workshop we ran a few years ago on estimands and different types of analysis methods for different estimands. And of course, there is the tutorial article that we've been discussing. So the paper, it's published in the BMJ, and the title is The Estimands Framework, a Primer on the ICH E9 R1 Addendum, which is a good kind of source for different aspects around estimands and also has a lot of references to other resources.
And that's our episode. We've shared some resources in the podcast description, so check them out if you want to discover more about estimands. And don't forget to follow us on Twitter at MRCCTU and on LinkedIn at MRC Clinical Trials Unit at UCL for all the latest updates. Thank you for listening, and we'll see you again for the next episode of Trial Talk.